Tonight at Campbell Hall, UCSB Arts and Lectures will be hosting the 2017 Arthur N. Roop Debate. The topic this year is ISIS an existential threat to the United States? On Tuesday, we spoke to one of the speakers, Mark Gopin, the director of the Center on Religion, Diplomacy, and Conflict Resolution at George Mason. Today, KCSB's Nkechi Ikem speaks to Monica Duffy Toft, the director of the Center for Strategic Studies at Tufts University. This is what she had to say.
I do not believe it is an existential threat to the United States. I think it's an existential threat to some entities around the world, but in particular to the United States, I do not think it's an existential threat.
How did you come to that conclusion?
So I have been studying civil wars and violence, not just religious violence, but civil wars and violence for over 20 years now in my research and then in my teaching. And so I've studied a lot of different groups and a lot of different ideas that motivates groups. And indeed, ISIS, you know, they have a pretty extreme, a pretty perverse interpretation of Islam and an extreme way of pursuing what they see as their objectives, which is to sort of clear the world of non-Muslim peoples, and in particular Muslims who have non-Muslims who don't share their view of the world. And pursuing that, as they pursue this, they've used pretty extreme violence, forms of violence, and a rhetoric in order to recruit people, particularly fellow Muslims, and it tends to be fellow young male Muslims, although women have been joining as well. So in studying all these different kinds of groups, I've looked at how they formed, I've looked at how they fought, and then I look at how they end. And it just turns out that Islamic groups tend not to fare very well. They tend to end up being policed, meaning that they eventually they are defeated. And then those that stick around, they tend to sort of normalize or moderate their position. And so when I look at ISIS, you know, the ideology does have limited bandwidth, if you want to think about it in those terms, since we're on the radio, for who is going to support the ideas. And not only support them, but more importantly, fight for those ideas. And as the Western coalition or as the anti-ISIS coalition forms and takes hold and causes pain and makes it more difficult and more costly for ISIS to govern in this area that they've declared as the caliphate, I don't think you're going to have as many supporters and their ideas aren't going to be as attractive. And people are not going to die on their behalf as readily. You know, when it started out a couple of years ago, it was seen as attractive. It was seen as sexy. It was answering sort of a call for some young people who were suffering from a lack of a bigger sense of being in the world. But as this has dragged on, particularly in Syria, but, now into Iraq, of course, what you're seeing is that people are becoming disaffected. And with the help of anti-ISIS violence, you know, war fighting against them and making it much more painful to be part of the organization, you'll see more disaffection. That doesn't mean that until they're defeated, and I'm not sure we're going to definitively defeat them, but as we're on the road to defeat, that we still won't feel some pain. But I don't think the United States is going to feel that in the same way that people in the region, you can think about Iraq, Turkey, Syria, of course, but then the broader region into Europe, which now we have a refugee crisis, we're not going to feel it in the same way. So as an existential threat, yes, the ideas potentially could be an existential threat to the United States, but I do have a sense that our values and what the country stands for, that can combat that. And then physically as an existential threat, they're just given that they're an ocean apart and we're surrounded by two oceans, the United States just doesn't feel the threat physically in the same way.
There's this fear that the United States will fall if we continue to allow immigrants from that region into the country, if we continue to pull back perhaps from that region militarily. Why do Americans feel such a strong fear of ISIS if there really is no, I guess, strong threat there?
You know, I can understand why Americans are fearful. And look, they have a right to be. The United States' territory has not been attacked since the Japanese and Pearl Harbor, right, since the 1940s. So, you know, as an existential threat we have not faced since the 1940s in that way where territory was actually attacked. And then we have 9/11, and we have the entire Cold War. The United States and the Soviet Union were buttressed up against each other, and we didn't have any direct confrontations. And here you've got two states, you know, possessing nuclear weapons, and you never had the high level of threat that people are feeling today, because there was no sort of action on American or U.S. territory. It was taking place in other parts of the world. In Cuba, we can talk about Angola, Ethiopia, where the two states were sort of trying to duke it out in different areas. But 9/11 changed that, where you had the towers coming down, over 2,000 people being killed, all on the basis of an ideology that ISIS abides by, right? So Al-Qaeda were the perpetrators of the 9/11 attacks, and ISIS is an offshoot of Al-Qaeda, right? It's declared itself independent of Al-Qaeda. And so I think where people are feeling that is because of the 9/11 attack, that these organizations, these entities of which ISIS is one, have the capacity to directly and harm us because they have harmed us. But in the meantime, since 9/11, we've had a complete retooling and re-outfitting of our intelligence agencies, of our police forces, of our Defense Department in order to deal with these sorts of threats. Yes, some are going to get through. We talk about lone wolves, so individual actors or pairs of actors. We can talk about San Bernardino, Miami, different kinds of actions that we've seen premised on this idea of Islamic jihadism. But this is an extraordinarily resilient country. Even after 9/11, yes, thousands of people died, but the United States recovered from that. So I understand why some Americans and feel as if the Islamic threat, the ISIS threat, is really palpable and one of the most pressing ones. But I think if you look at it historically, if you look at the resilience of this country, and you look at what's been done since 9/11, which was absolutely harmful to this country, but the retooling of our armed forces and the agencies that are responsible for keeping the American homeland secure, they've done a pretty good job. We have not had a major serious attack since. And now, you know, Syria, the question is yes, we're going to be putting, and we have put, American troops in harm's way, but is that absolutely a vital existential threat to the homeland, to U.S. national security? I'm not so sure. I'm not convinced.
Do you think the policies that the United States has towards that region and has toward ISIS is a good one?
So do I think it's a good policy? I mean, I guess the question is what have been our policies? And you could make the argument that going into Iraq in the second Gulf War was a very, very bad policy. It was a war of choice, and it sort of laid the groundwork for, you know, a failed state in Iraq that allowed for these organizations, Al-Qaeda and then ISIS's offshoot, to thrive. And so I think the United States has to acknowledge and recognize its role in sort of helping to lay the ground for these sorts of entities to first develop and then to actually operate in the region. So I don't think to date our policies have been good, and I don't think we have full recognition and acknowledgement about how our policies have sort of fed into this narrative of this sort of West coming after and humiliating, which is a very strong narrative, humiliating the Muslim world, right in the heart of where Islam was born. So I would hope that, you know, under this administration, there's a greater acknowledgement. I'm not sure I'm seeing it, because we are seeing a buildup of forces. But, you know, the good news, in a sense, is we're helping to support the Kurdish entities that are there. They've always been quite successful in fighting against these, you know, first in the Persian, the second Gulf War, and now they seem more successful against ISIS. That, to me, is a good policy. What makes me nervous is the imposition of more U.S. troops and support, because that's exactly what these jihadis want. They want to take down Westerners in the Muslim heartland, because it feeds the narrative that outsiders are here and we need to cleanse the place. So there's parts of the policy that I'm supportive of. I think it's good. There's other parts of the policy that give me worry and trepidation.
I'm wondering, what countries do you feel do face an existential threat due to ISIS, and would any country, say, in Europe, be among those?
That is a great question. So I think the immediate surroundings. So Syria and Iraq is absolutely an existential threat because they want to govern along these sort of Salafist Wahhabi, sort of very extreme interpretations of Islamic lines. Turkey could potentially be an existential threat to Turkey, but Turkey does have a formidable military. It's got a strong government that functions. You know, now it's functioning even better with Erdogan's changes, sort of creating a bit of a more autocratic system. Europe, I'm not so sure that it would be an existential threat. It's contingent on the policies that Europeans adopt. You know, earlier I had mentioned this idea about values and fighting for values. This really is a fight for Western values and ideas, and the idea that individual rights and liberties and religious freedom should be protected. And so the question is what is going to be the Europeans' reaction as this threat sort of and the attacks continue on their homelands? Are they going to sort of start discriminating against on religious grounds, or are they going to acknowledge that a lot of this behavior that's happening is individuals who have adopted this perverted set of ideas that are criminals that then need to be policed and use intelligence to go after them, rather than sort of condemning an entire part of a society, meaning the Muslim society. I mean, you could think about the United States and the Muslim ban. It's not all Muslims. It's a very, very small minority that is, you know, adopting these ideas. And then an even smaller minority is actually doing something to put those ideas into place. And so for me, when I think about the Europeans and whether it's an existential threat, I think we want to think about the policies that they adopt and see how they sort of diminish the values. You know, France just had its election and, you know, the far right wants to ban immigration. It wants to pull out of Europe. It sort of wants to abandon some of the ideas and institutions that have taken centuries to cement, right? And then took decades since World War II to sort of institutionalize. It's good news that Le Pen didn't win, but it's fragile, right? Germany, we'll see what happens in Germany. President Merkel really did try to have an open arms. It sort of backfired. We're going to be watching those elections as well because we want to see how it is that the state and the citizens within those states put pressure on governments to respond to these ideas and then to the actors who are using these ideas. What I say is that we really, as a country, as a citizenry, we have to be very thoughtful about what our reaction is and then how our reaction may make the situation worse, right? So we end up feeding into the narrative of we're the hostile West, we're the nasty West. I agree our policies haven't been great, but fundamentally, the values that we're trying to protect, individual liberty, equality of women, freedom of religion, not imposing views from up high, you know, and perverted interpretation, how we respond to that, I think, is going to be have a more profound impact about whether this becomes, at this point, I don't think it's an existential threat, but whether it does become an existential threat. It could. I don't feel as if it is right now. But it's our reaction, I think, that's going to help to define that.
The event will be taking place today at Campbell Hall. Event starts at 7:30 p.m. and is free of charge. For more information, visit artsandlectures.ucsb.edu. Both our interviews with Mark Gopin and Monica Duffy Toft can be heard on our SoundCloud. Search KCSB FM.